हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय श्री प्रभुपाद की जय. ओके सो नाउ वी आर सक्रिय स्टार इन द अपेंडिक्स वन ऑन यज्ञ विधि. नाउ ओके द एंड ऑफ द यज्ञ एंड इट्स ओरिजिन्स. ओके So just read this last. In the Purusha Shukta, we read that when the demigods, after being created by the Lord, desired to worship him through the system of yajna, by their will and contemplation, they offered the Lord himself as the first oblation for the creation of the universe. This was the first yajna. Yat Purushena Havisha Deva Yajnam Atanvata. And from it emerged the first elements of life, Tani Dharmani Pratamanyasana. Furthermore, the Puranas describe how all yajnas have their basis in the Supreme Lord. Yajna varahasya shariram yajnatam agat. All varieties of yajnas emerge from the body of yajna varaha. Right? So everything is going to be coming from the Lord. And so then those primordial demigods or the associates of the Lord, these aren't the demigods within the universe. This is the primordial demigods. And so then they perform this original sacrifice, so we have the primary creation. And then that same then is applied, and according to that blueprint, then Brahma then it creates within this universe. You know, but it's the same principle, you know, the same principles of the devas here are expansions of those devas, who are expansions of the Lord's associates, you know, who are then the expansion in Vaikuntha, who are the expansions of, you know, the formal vyuhas and everything, and then who are the expansion of Krishna and Radharani and the gopis, you know, and like that. So you have all the one of those vyuhas. So I think there's seven or eight vyuhas, and so then you're going to start with Radha and Krishna and come out from there. So here then as Krishna expands, then all the yajnas, all these technical things then expand from him as Varaha. Okay, the fire. Yajna involves the installation and worship of the fire god Agni. The first mantra of the Rig Veda addresses him as Hota, or the chief sacrificial priest. It is his service to act as the mouth of Vishnu, the consuming agent, who carries the offerings to the Lord. It is described that the wood of the fire is Agni's ears, the smoke his nostrils, the small flames his eyes, the coals his head, and the fully blazing fire flames his tongue. Thus, the best offering is to Agni's tongue. So it means the fire should be burning nicely and all that. You don't just throw it on the wood or throw it on the ash or what. You put it, you want to offer it into the nice flame. So when it's talking about starting the fire, you actually don't start the yajna until the fire is burned into the wood so that you have some coals. Then you can start because then you'll always have a nice flame. Because even if it goes down, once you throw the ghee, then the flame will come up, or you put more wood. So it can't be just that the wood has started, it has to be actually into the wood, because then you have all the features of Agni, right? The fire for the yajna may come from, okay. And what's here is that this is important. While this is brought out, is because for at least for us, for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, because understanding the philosophy of Chintaveda Tattva, we don't have any difficulty with Krishna being everything, but at the same time being separate as a person, and that he is expanded as all the demigods, but he's still his sovereignty, it remains. And so then this aspect of Agni carries the oblation to Krishna. You're offering it to Krishna, he carries it there. You're offering to Radharani, he carries it there. So he is the one who he accepts. He is the, like you said, the consuming agent. So all these things are consumed in the fire, and he brings it to. That's his duty. right? So that's known also a mantra that we said before, Jata Vedas. So others, like let's say the Shris, they don't worship demigods, so they can't use Agni. They just install Lakshmi Narsinga, or Lakshmi Narayan in the fire, and then everything goes to them because they don't deal with any demigods. The Madhuas, they can deal with demigods because they have this understanding as we do, but they don't put as much emphasis on, you know, Krishna and Braj and those kind of things. They stay down within the, you know, I mean, it's Bhagavan, but it'll be the Bhagavan feature of Paramatma, you know, that kind of aspect. Just like you see is that we have our pictures of Karana Dakshai Vishnu, and he's laying on the causal ocean. As he's doing that, he's breathing in and out. When he breathes in, the universes come in, we breathe out, and they expand like that. But then we also see is that there's the Bhagavan feature, even though he's the Paramatma, the Mahatattva, that he's still, it's who's Paramatma? It's Bhagavan. So therefore, then he's also has his palace with all his associates and servants and everything like that. That's the platform on which all this is happening that we're saying, the first yajna and the whole primary creation, it happens on that platform. Right. So we don't have any difficulty with this, while others, then they have problem here, or that you're offering to him and he's the one who's everything in the creation. So therefore, when you're doing the Virupaksha japa at the end, you know, holding the rice and the kusa and the fruit, then we see is that he's talking about his three eyes and all these different things. So it appears that it's many things connected with Shiva, but that's the whole point, is that's the universal form, is that how he pervades everything, the Brahman feature of the Lord, how he's pervading everything. But it's all features of him. It's all his qualities. But then those are what then as Paramatma, as Kiradakshai, then he takes all that, and then each living entity gets their forms and situations accordingly. So these kind of aspects don't make any sense to them, so they just kind of ignore it and, you know, do what's easy for them. But with the Chintaveda Veda Tattva, you understand that there's a lot more wide variety here. And then you can have Krishna, even though he's the source of everything, he can just be playing his flute and have no duties at all. Well, if you can't understand this Chintaveda Veda Tattva, then he's God. He has to be managing it. He has to be organized. He may have his assistants, but it's he's doing it. So it just is the aspect of that freedom that Krishna has to just be absorbed in rasa with the devotees doesn't actually come up. They are attracted by it, the sweetness of, you know, the Vrindavan pastimes and those. But at the same time, as they just see it as a opulence of Mahanarayan. They don't see it that, no, that's Krishna's opulence, is that he has nothing to do. Yes? No.
Hare Guru Maharaj?
Yes, yes.
So the demigod Agni, and then his worshipable deity is Yajna Varaha, as mentioned in the previous sentence. Or the Yajna can also mean the Manvantara Avatar Yajna, also will be in that category.
Here is that all the Yajnas come from the form, from the body of Yajna Varaha, just like from Krishna's Sarup, which is Satchit Ananda, you're going to get the whole expansion of the Brahman, the whole expansion of Paramatma, and then, you know, his ultimate feature as Bhagavan. So that's the complete form, because Brahman only has that, the all expanding, I mean that, you know, all pervading feature, but no generic, you know, everything's generic. Then as Paramatman includes the all pervading, and he's localized. The Bhagavan means he's the individual who's localized and has all these features. So in this way, then from his expansions, then for all the elements of all the yajna, that expands from Yajna Varaha. Right? So everything's coming from Krishna's Sarup, but then as he expands here, he specifically does this through Yajna Varaha. So Agni is the chief sacrificial priest. Right? And so then naturally, then in here, you would think that he would be worshiping Yajna Varaha.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Yeah. But I don't think that they're the Manvantaras or anything else. They have other features. But, you know, I would say the Manvantaras would be Kiradaksha Vishnu.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. So the fire for the yajna may come from a brahmana's house, meaning from his daily household yajna, because generally when they finish, they cover with ash and keep it, you know, and then in the evening they do again. In the morning, if you do that morning and evening, you can very nicely keep the fire going like that. From the lamp in the deity room, because there's a lamp there, you can bring the fire produced by the chanting of mantra. That, you know, the mantra you can chant and you can produce fire, or churn from the aratni sticks, right? Where you have the upper, the lower, and the middle, and then that's churned, and then that starts fire, and then from there, then you do. Or by placing camphor on a pure bell metal plate and igniting it by magnifying glass, directing light from the sun. Right? So generally these would be the natural ways to start, because then they're considered pure. You know, and if you don't have that, then we have what's called matches, or one of those little Bic lighters, you know. But you light the lamp. You light the lamp, and then you purify the lamp and take the fire out. Then from that, you're going to light the fire. So in any case, the fire for the yajna is going to come from pure fire. So either you've either just brought it from these other places, that lamp, lit your lamp from there, and then from that you're purifying and then use that for the fire, or you're going to start it there. So all these ones are considered bona fide. You know, we hear before is by chanting the mantra, they could start the fire. And that, yeah.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Prabhupada mentions about this within the deity worship, the aspect of Niranjana or Nirajana, the lighting of the lamp. There should be always lamp on the side. So this is also a very important aspect within deity worship.
Yes, it is. It's just you're doing good enough to get the lights turned on, and all of the lights in the deity room have bulbs in them, and the switch works, you know, like that. So for most places, they're doing good if they can get all that. But the tradition is there's always a lamp in the deity room. So when you come into the deity room in the morning, first thing, you light that lamp, you know. And ideally, it's kept burning all the time. You know, so you don't. But if not, then it's there, it's lit, and then that lamp is always going. You just keep the oil going, keep the lamp. Because sometimes the wick may not last all night, but whatever. So, yes, it's supposed to be there. So you see in all the old traditional temples, they always have lamps. You know, it's not just lighting for the deity, but it also has that element. Is that it is light beam, but there must be one. There has to be a lamp there. So even if you're using lights, it's always nice if there's a lamp. But generally, what I notice is that for most people, when I know they notice that they do the lighting for the deities, the most important thing is to be able to see the dress and the flowers. And so they use very, very bright lights, you know. And you know, you get a very nice darshan, a very inspiring darshan. But you may have noticed, I mean, one for Nrisingadeva, obviously, but for Radha Madhava, sometimes when the electricity goes off and they switch to the UPS, then they just have some very small lights. And so when those go on, they're not so bright. You'll know the immediate thing to notice is that, yes, you can't see the clothes and garlands as well, but the moods and of their face, the different, you know, exchanges and all that, that you can see very well. So in the traditional sense, you had the light, the lamps. And then if you want to add light, you add it so it doesn't look like there's light. It just looks like it's lamps. And we used to do that. I don't know if they were doing now, but we used to do a long time ago during the Kartik in the evening. We'd bring lamps and light them, you know, in Radha Madhava's deity room. You know, so we had extra lamps, but you have to have things like in the Shringadev's temple. Then you have the one on his face, but it looks, you can tell it's a spotlight because they turn it up so bright. But you're supposed to turn it down to where it just blends in, where it looks like it's just the lamps are doing it. So there's always this thing about, generally most people like way more light than you necessarily need if the darshan is about the you know, exchange with the Lord. So in this way, then lamps kind of fall by the wayside, because in that very bright, the lamps won't have any really meaning other than they're there, you know, just the auspiciousness, but they won't actually be adding anything because they give out this kind of yellowish light. Well, I find most devotees, when they do these, you know, more of halogens and others, they go for a white light. So it's like moon light rather than the sun. So if you use the ones with our yellow light, then you get much more of a balanced kind of element. And, you know, you do enough where you can see the clothes and that nicely, but not so much that you lose that, you know, Krishna's face becomes reflective and goes flat. You know, that's what why in the theater they use makeup, because when they use those bright lights, your face disappears. You know, so they have to put the eyeliner, you have to put in the corner a red dot. Otherwise, then your eyes just go together and you put all the other things so that your face doesn't disappear in the lights. So here, as many times I see, as the face is, Krishna's there because he is. He's not the problem. But then it's harder to see the mood of the deities. So you see, in the old traditional things, then it was all done by lamps. So if you want to add lights, then that's nice. Use a few less lamps. You don't have to have as many. But then, you know, do the lights so it looks like it has that kind of natural thing. But I think it appears to be it's either an acquired taste or something that just comes from particular previous, you know, kind of cultural experiences where it's dealing with these things, or you've seen it and appreciate the flavor like that. But in general, I've seen as most people don't. That's why there are no lamps, because it would do nothing. And previously, if you say that there has to be a lamp there, what does that mean? It has to be maintained. So that means every now and again, you have to, you know, quite frequently adjust the wick, take off the ash, adjust the wick, put more oil. So what does that mean? That means there's people regularly going in and out of the deity room all the time. You know, so they're always there with the deity. If somebody comes from darshan, then they can, you know, put the shatari. They do. So there would be a normal thing is that there would be time where you're on the altar. Like in Vrindavan, they would, I don't know if they still do it when Omkar was there. Then at those times, I think after breakfast and up to the noon bhog offering, and then after the 4 o'clock, you know, offering an artik up till the evening offering, then there were pujaris on the altar. If nothing happens, they just sit there and chant. And if people come, then they stand up, accept garlands, give things back, do things, all that. So those pujaris that are there on duty, they can take care of the lamps. But you generally see for us, as soon as there's no artik or puja or offering, then no one's on the altar and there's no even thought that someone should be. It's just that you only go on the altar when there's some service, but they don't know that being with the deity and accompanying the deity is also service. You know, like that. It's because of the personal, you know. So it's just like you see some, you know, big guys that are there, then they have what's called a PA, right? Personal assistant. They're there and they take care of everything and do everything, go around with them, travel with them. They just take care of all this thing. But it's about personal assistant. It's not a matter of it's about opulence, prestige and that. It's just about the personal interaction and needs. So then for us, then we'll generally take that as, oh, that's extravagant, that's unnecessary and that, why can't they take care of themselves? What we mean is I got to take care of myself. So if I have to do that, why should anybody else have assistance? You know, and all. And so then, you know, it doesn't, it's not seen as something that's normal. Or you have like the girl in the wedding, the Western wedding. Then when the girl comes out for the wedding, you know, everyone's in the pews waiting. The priest is there. The, you know, the groom is there. The bridesmaids and everything are all there. And then the bride comes out on her own. Right. And then whoever the father, then he walks down the aisle. Where are her friends? She's on her own. Well, in the Vedic, you see, when she comes out, she comes with her friends. And they help her come out and go around and do all the different things that garland, they help. They're there. So that's the whole point, is that there's a vast difference between the Vedic, which is personal. It's based on the individuality, while the West is simply based on identity. Individuality, yes, I as an individual have individuality, and everybody else is an identity. Everybody else is supposed to take care of me and my desires. I'm the individual, everybody else's identity. Problem is, everybody thinks like that, so nothing happens. So in the Vedic, it's about the relationship. It's about when we say the Sambandhigyan, it's about what is the relationship that you have with that other person. You're going to interact, what's your relationship? Rather, we look at, okay, what am I getting done? What can I get done for me? But what's left out is, what's the relationship? Because if the relationship is appreciated, then we'll deal differently. Right? And so in the modern context, we're just being a manager and making profit. Individuality is gets in the way of profit. We make less profit if we're dealing with individuals. We make more profit. We're just dealing with identity. Oh, they're just one of our workers. But if they're an individual, then you have to deal with them as an individual. You know, there's the generic. He does have an identity that they do work there, and they have their particular offices that they have to get done. But you have to seize them about the individual. That was what, you know, Carnegie was. You know, a revolutionary idea that Dale Carnegie brought up in his book, what is it, how to make friends and win friends and influence people, was being personal. That's the whole crux of whatever he's talking about, is you're just personal. You include the element of their individuality. And that's like groundbreaking, you know, revolutionary idea. Like that, but still nobody uses it. But you know, they did for a while. And so that's the things people are successful, is about them as an individual, you as an individual, everyone works together. And then you have your duties. So then therefore the identity, you do this, you do that, and all that, and it's all cooperating together. So individuals cooperate together. So this kind of concept being missing, therefore then things like that, that personal touch of a lamp there for the Lord, that there's always there. It's always anytime you need, because otherwise you come in to do the arti and there's no fire. You have to, you know, they forget. They have to go out, you know, to get the, you know, something to light with, or the matches never work. You know, instead of just seeing the pujari pick up the lamp, light it off of the lamp that's always in the deity room, and then off of the arti, he has to sit there and try to get the matches to work or get the thing to work, and you know, all that. So as long as it didn't work very well, but if I got it to work, it's good enough. I don't think, okay, we need a better one than this, or this is, no, it worked for me. I had to do it, you know, 5-10 times while everybody in the audience is sitting there watching. Krishna has to sit there and watch, and I'm thinking that's fabulous. But even if you don't, at least you bring a lamp, light the lamp, and then from that light everything. You just bring a lamp with you that's only used during the arti. You know, are only used during when you do the morning puja. Okay. That will also work. But, you know, that won't be here for doing this part. But the lamp also indicates that there's someone there willing to do service. I think it's one of the 64 items where it says, you know, willingness to do whatever is necessary for pleasing the Lord. So this is one of the features of it, that pujaris are always on the altar to take care of the deities. But, you know, you won't see that because it's, I'm just sitting there, I'm bored, as if it's about us, you know, like that. So, yeah. Does that make sense? Because when you have the external form, that means that there's an action. The sambandha is the relationship. Abhideya is then going to be how you apply that relationship. That's why Sambandha Gyan can be knowledge, or we have, Vasudeva is the Lord of the Jnana, you know, the Icha Kriya and Jnana, the Shaktis. But that knowledge is knowledge of the relationship. But then the Abhideya is how you apply that knowledge in that relationship to actual practical activity that gets a result based on that relationship. So you can get into that, the more technical elements of it. But the point is the mechanics, but it's about the person that starts. That's why the descending is superior, because it starts with the person, then comes down. Well, if you start with the impersonal, the identity, only how many get it up to localized? Okay, I should talk to my workers. So I talk to a worker. It's localized. It's not necessarily so personal and about him. But at least I'm willing to, I as a localized person, and talk to them as a localized. But it's not about the individuality, about the personality. So that's better. That's what Carnegie is talking about. But the actual thing is, what's your relationship with them? And based on that, then you act. So that's why previously in cultures, there would be the relationship. And then in the modern, when they look at it from an impersonal point of view, then they see as, oh, why is they have to do that? Why does this one have to assist that one or serve this one and all that? It's about the relationship. You have a relationship with the person. They only say, oh, you have to serve. I don't want to serve. I should only be served. You're like that. So that's the thing is, oh, why we should serve them. But then the question comes, well, why anybody should serve you? So if it's about relationship, what's your relationship? Based on that, then there's service. Because the jiva means a service. There's no question of any other identity. So we don't have that we're identity as servant, then when do we apply it? So this is just another case where, you know, no one's there applying it. Yeah? Is that good?
Yes, Maharaj. Yes, Maharaj. Good.
Okay, so then next point is, during the Kusandika rites for various ceremonies, the samskars, different forms of Agni, are called to carry the oblations to the Lord. So depending on what's the nature of the flavor of the particular ceremony, then he has that particular form. So then you have all the different, you know, here, Yojak Agni, Driti Agni, Sikhi Agni, Chandra Agni, Mangala Agni, Partiva Agni, Balada, Suchi, Satya, Samudbhava, Teja, Vidhu, Prajapati, and Vaishnava Agni. You know, so for our Pancharatrik things, we use Vaishnava Agni. But for the Vedic ceremonies, and depending on which one, then you use the particular one. The Mandapa. The Mandapa is the place where the Yajna Kunda is situated, and the ceremony will be performed. The Mandapa should be sprinkled with pure water, cleaned with a mixture of cow dung and water, and decorated with designs on the floor, banana trees, leaves, garlands, flags, and mangala ghats, auspicious pots that have been installed by mantra. In the eight directions, the four Vedas installed in pots in the four cardinal directions. Right, so there's always going to be the mandapa, is where you're going to set everything up, you know, where you'll have all your mandalas and everything, and the yajna kunda, all that, those things. So that area is purified and decorated and made very nice, as much as one's ability and facilities. The kunda. In the mandapa, a square pit is built measuring minimum one hasta, the distance from the elbow to the tip of the middle finger, around 18 inches. You know, so, you know, that'll be from, you know, the elbow up to the middle finger. That's why you can either use the measurement from either the priest who is organizing everything, or from the yajaman, you know, who is being done on his behalf, or the person who's overseeing the whole thing, means whoever's the head priest. So either the practical priest who's setting it up, means the advaryu, he's going to arrange it. It's either according to his measurement, according to the acharya's measurement, or according to the yajaman's. So in that way, then you set it up. So with a one musti, the width of the fist, approximately 3 inches deep on each side. Right, you know, so it's about that much deep, you know, like that. And then that's, you put down bricks and then put sand and everything like that. That's the minimum. The size of the kunda, according to convenience, may be larger depending upon the area available, the ceremony, the number of guests, etc. So in other words, how many functions are being done with the fire? The pit may be surrounded by a one or three-stepped wall. Kunda cannot be constructed. One can perform the yajna on a bed of sand of the same dimensions. This is known as standila. In the Krishna Yajurveda, Samhita stated, when a yajna kunda is built, everything becomes well established. Wealth, welfare, energy, health, and spiritual knowledge. Yeah. So we see is that everything in the Vedic, it's all, because it's all connected with Krishna, it's all coming from Krishna. Like we see, it's all coming from Yajna Varaha, all these aspects of the Yajna. And the mantras are coming from Krishna's breathing, right? So we see is, you know, Hayagriva, you know, from his nostrils, then when he breathes, then you get the sound of the Veda. So then it's, everything's always going to be auspicious. There's always some benefits because people say, oh, what's the benefit? You know, you say here. Wealth, welfare, energy, health, and spiritual knowledge. Good, not good? Yeah. So, like that. So, it's always nice. It's always going to be good. There's never anything where it's just ritualistic. You cannot know these things and not care, and then it can have that ritualistic flavor. But as far as the Lord's concerned, then these all have these particular aspects. Okay. Then, the kunda. Okay, the wood. The wood should be cut to the size of the kunda, and some should be cut to one pradesh length, you know, like 9 inches. One, you know, because you need it for those small, when you put in the amatrika homas and other things. One should avoid using any type of secondhand wood, right? In other words, orange crates and old chairs, etc. Right? So, secondhand wood. Wet wood, wood from a dirty place, wood contaminated by impure items, wood eaten by worms, wood with thorns, or wood with bitter, milky, or sour sap, such as neem, banyan, or pine wood. You know, because they just don't taste very good. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then these are the, you know, so generally it's always some nice wood, you know, a fruit tree or some auspicious wood is always the best. If not, then, you know, some other kind of wood that you know, is a nice wood. The oblations. Normally, the oblations offered in the fire consist of ghee, barley, and sesame seeds, although one can also add other ingredients such as gur, dry fruit, durva grass, camphor, lotus seeds, etc. Right, and anything, you know, that's nice like that, you know. In some yajnas, they prescribe that one offer charu. This is made in two ways. One can either make sweet charu, which is basically the same as sweet rice with raisins, cardamom, pods, etc. One can make a charu. So one makes khichdi. In both cases, one should add extra ghee, so that's charu, that the offerings burn easily in the fire. Also, one is they burn nicely because you have the ghee. And also, it's easy if you have ghee on top, then when you put the spoon in, the ghee gets on the spoon. Then you can pick up the charo and it doesn't stick to the spoon and it goes into the fire. So it does both. You need a good amount of ghee. In the final offering, Purnahuti, one may offer fruits, new cloth, haritaki, pan, betel nuts, flowers, navaratna, etc. The remnants from the Purnahuti may be accepted as prasad after the yajna, as this final oblation is offering to the Lord for his satisfaction. One's karma does not contaminate the final offering. It's just like chanting Hare Krishna. You know, you're chanting on your beads, so not touching your beads, you get contaminated. You know, someone else, no one will touch your beads, because if I touch them, you know, all your karma goes there into the, no. So who came up with this? I have no idea. And, but the point is it's, yes, by the offering, one's, you know, sins go, but it's not that they go into the offering. The offering's for the Lord's satisfaction, because you please serve the Lord, please the Lord. That's why you get purified. Not because there's some, you know, mechanistic method that all your sins are transferred to the banana, and then whoever tends the banana will turn into like a rakshasa or something. No, they have systems for doing that. They would do in different ages that you see that once the king, I think, is something in the kingdom, I don't know, he took on so much karma from his citizens that he actually turned black. And so this was the problem. So then they made this gold deity, solid gold, you know, deity, you know, fairly good size. And then through some yajna and mantras and all that, transferred all that karma from the king into this deity. And gold, you know, it's nice, especially new, it's bright, shiny, you know, like this. But when they transferred the karma, all the sin from the king, the gold turned black. So everybody became worried. Okay, this is something serious. So then, you know, a word was put out that, you know, so it's taken from the king, but it's not gone. It's still there. Somebody has, you know, is going to take it. So then the you know, word was put out, you know, in the kingdom that any Brahmin who, you know, and it was a big deity, any Brahmin who comes and takes the can come and take the deity. The deity is theirs. All that gold is there. So it was a good amount of gold. So many Brahmins came, but when they saw how the deity is black, and they're saying, I thought you said it's gold. It is gold, but because of all the sin going into there, it turned black. All the Brahmins went away. So then there was one Brahmin. He was so poor. He really, really, really needed the money. So then he came. And he saw and all that. So then he went to take the deity. As soon as he touched it, this huge monster came out, and you know, that was the form of the sin of the king, all that sinful activities. Big, big, you know, big, you know, monster came out and started chasing the Brahmin. So the Brahmin ran down to the pond or the river, did his achman, and then started chanting Purusha Shukta. And then the Purusha Shukta is the Lord. So the Purusha Shukta then personified attacked and killed the demon. Right? So just the Purusha Shukta being chanted every day, you know, removes all inauspiciousness and all that. So that's a separate yajna that they specifically do. So it's not that just because I got a banana and I tossed it in the fire, then all my karma's in that banana. But then how is that an offering to Krishna? I take all my bad sin and all that, put it in the banana, and I hear Krishna, please accept this, you know, sinful banana. No, it's because of you render service. You just like you chant, you get purified. You take darshan and the deity. Prabhupada mentioned devotees are worried about the, you know, the palmistry and, you know, the, oh, my karma, I got this bad thing, how did it like that? Prabhupada said, you just go and stand in front of the deity, you know, when you take darshan and when you clap your hands during the kirtan, the lines change. Because by doing service, clapping your hands, it said all the impurities that are there from previous karmas are like crows sitting in a tree. And when you clap your hands, the crows fly away. So in the same way, all these go away just by taking darshan and clapping, dancing and chanting in front of the deities. So all these things are going on, you know. Otherwise, is everybody standing back? He's clapping and dancing, so everyone stands back because they don't want to get hit by any of touched by any of the crows of his sinful activity. So you can see is that it's somehow or another very simplistic, not well understood. Now, take that thing and take that, move that into the future 1,000 years from now, and people are doing that. That just becomes a thing, and no one knows where it came from. So in the same way as all these little things that you see that as remnants left over from when people were practicing whatever their local religions were before Christianity, they had so many of these because they didn't know what they were originally from. What they were originally from. You know, it just wasn't known that it came from the Vedic when it was following. So that's why it has that you have to have, you know, the proper association, the proper everything, so that these things are understood rightly. Yes. Yeah. It is understood that a spiritual master takes on the reactions of his dependents, as explained the Hari Bhakti of Lust, quoting the Niti Shastra. The sins of the citizens are suffered by the king. The king sins by the Raja Guru. The wife sins by the husband. And the disciple sins by the Guru. That's Chanakya. You know, he's quoting from other places also. But he just puts it all together nicely. Like that, Manu talks about this. But not in one verse. Right? The priests. The Yajna may involve the following four priests, Ritviks. Hotri, the priest who invokes and worships the Lord through the medium of the fire. Udgatpati, the priest who is in charge of chanting the mantras. Advarya, the priest who prepares and installs the paraphernalia and ignites the sacred fire. He sees the smooth running of the ceremony, that all the paraphernalia, everything's there. And then the Brahma, the master of ceremonies, he sees that all the mantras are recited properly, corrects any errors that occurred during the proceedings, and sees to the proper stoking of the fire, right, that it's properly maintained. There are only three priests. There will be Advarya, Udgata, and Ritvik, or the Hotri. If two, then the Udgata and the Hotri, the one. So in other words, if there's only three, then the Brahma is not there to oversee. The Hotri oversees. And then he has the person chanting, the person arranging. If there's only two, then the Hotri will set everything up and do all that kind of thing, and then the Udgata will take care of the chanting. And if there's only one, then you have the Hotri. And we see in these very big ceremonies, then they can have a fifth, which will be the Acharya. So he oversees that all of them are doing their job nicely. Yajna paraphernalia. So here's where the word Ritvik comes from. Right? You're doing on behalf of someone else. Like that. But you're chosen. The Ritvik is chosen. You're not a Ritvik just because you decided to be, right? Yajna paraphernalia. The implements used in the yajna are known as yajna yudha, or the weapons of the yajna. The reason for this name is given in the Aitreya Brahmana 34.1 of the Rig Veda. Quote, at the time when the Lord created yajna, the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas also came into being. Yajna began to run away, and the Brahmins and Kshatriyas chased him, armed with their own weapons. The weapons of the Kshatriyas were horses, chariots, swords, bows, etc., and the weapons of the Brahmanas were the utensils used in the Yajna. When the Kshatriyas pursued the Yajna, Yajna, being scared, ran faster, and the Kshatriyas returned in defeat. However, the Brahmins were successful. By showing Yajna their weapons, it recognized them as its own weapons, and thus consented to stay with the Brahmins. Right, so that's why Brahmanas do all these things for others. The Kshatriyas can do sacrifices for themselves. They're doing their own, like they do it. Let's say you have a daily yajna that you do, morning and evening, or like that. The Kshatriya can do it himself, not a problem. The Vaishya may do it himself, but to do for others and get charity for that, then only the Brahmins. There are innumerable items used in different yajnas, but we will only list the ones that are of major importance, right? Because we only use a few major ones, and that's all. But otherwise, they have. I remember once going to in Vrindavan to one of the yajnic Brahmins' houses, so they've been there for the last 5,000 years. And went and they had a room, I'm not sure how big the room was, maybe 15. 18 feet square. And it had a kunda in the middle. And the whole thing had shelves and lined with all kinds of paraphernalia, basically similar to what we use, but different sizes and slightly different shapes and all these different things. So depending on what yajna, they have a very specific spoon and all that they use. Okay, so then we'll start with them. So you have the juhu. This is a shruk. Made from palash wood. So that's yes, the shruk is the big spoon that we use. Here it's named, it's made from palash wood. Svia, this is a small wooden sword which can be used for making the lines during the Pancharekastapana. It's also used for cutting durva grass and for stirring the charu. Generally, the svi is one aratni long. this is from the elbow to the tip of the little finger, right? Because a hand, a hasta, is to the middle finger. So it's basically about an inch difference. Then it's sharpened with kusa grass, right? You have kusa grass, and like you would sharpen a knife, and you do the like that, and that way you sharpen it. It is traditionally made from Kadira wood. Achasya katechu. Okay. I think which means jackfruit. Shruk. The shruk is a long ladle which has a bowl on top of it at one end with a beak shaped like an elephant's lips for ghee to be poured out. May also have a lion, cow's or lion's face. The shruk may be a bahu, approximately 27 inches, an aratni, approximately 17 inches, or a pradesh, 9 inches, depending. Like you see, some people have these little ones that they have the little kunda like this and everything so that they, can go around and do different things. Traditionally made from Sami wood, prosopis, spi, chigera. It originally manifests from the snout of Yajna Varaha, so that's why it says that it's like the elephant lips, has like that, the Varaha has a similar kind. Shruk is generally used for offering the Purnahuti, final oblation. So if it's made from Sami, then it's a shruk, and if it's made from Palash, then it's a Juhu, so like that. We just generally have one, whatever wood we can get it made out of. Shruva, this is a spoon used for offering the main oblations of ghee during the yajna. It is an aratni, 17 inches in length. The depression in of the bowl is in the width of the joint of the thumb and is split in two parts. The first joint, so that means that much space, so that you could put that inside. And whatever that is, that's the normal size. So it's small. The depression, okay. Two parts representing the sun and the moon, and the ida, the breath through the left nostril controlled by the moon, and pingala, the breath through the right nostril controlled by the sun, right? So you have the bowl, it has the hole in the middle, it has a split down the middle, it's the two sides, so it's the two nostrils of Varaha. So the shruk is his lip, and the shruva is the nostril. Okay, as the shruva originally manifests from the nostrils of Yajna Varaha, traditionally is made by Kadira wood. Okay. Or Palash. Okay. Then Prokshani. The Prokshani is one Pradesh, 9 inches long, with a depression shaped like a lotus leaf or lotus bud. This vessel holds purified water for sprinkling on the various paraphernalia in order to purify them, and for pouring water around the fire during Kushandika. Blades of the Durva grass are placed in the water for sanctification. Tradition is made from Varuna wood. Chataiva, Vox, Burgi, or Vikantaka. Okay, that's Flachorita, Sapida. Whichever one you want. That's the small one. You see they have the water and they're putting around the fire and everything like that. But it can also be used for prokshana. You pour some and then sprinkle like that. Upavesha. The fire is stoked by a wooden stick known as a upavesha, the end of which is shaped like a hand. It is the length of one pradesh or one aratni, right? So either 9 inches, half a hand. So in other words, a hand is, from the elbow to the end of the middle finger. So pradesh will be half of that. You take that and you get two and you get, it comes up with their hands a little longer. Okay. It is also used for moving burning wood when it falls out of place. Traditionally it's made from Udumbara wood, Fiscus, Golmerata, or Palash wood, Butia, Frondosa. So it seems that Palash seems to be, if you don't have other woods, then Palash or jackfruit is the standard. Jackfruit also is the preferred wood used for the house of Brahmins. Okay, then that was the yajna paraphernalia. The yajaman. The yajaman is the person who is the sponsor or benefactor of a particular ceremony. In the case of the wedding, it is the groom. In the case of the samskaras concerning the wife, it is the husband. In the case of those concerning the child, it is the father. A brahmana may perform his own ceremonies. However, if he is unable to do this, he may invite a Vaishnava brahmana to perform or guide the rites on his behalf, act as a ritvik. So in other words, those who are acting, so the yajaman, he's the one performing. That's why you see in the marriage ceremony, it mentions the groom is doing these things because he's the yajaman. Or in the other samskars, you know, then it's the husband or it's the father. That because they're the yajaman. They're the one who is being done. They're the one responsible that it's done. So if it's, you know, in the house and things like that, some samskars and things like that, the brahmin may do himself. Or that may be if it's a bigger program and this and that, then he has Brahmins come and on his behalf, they perform the ceremony and then he gives them dakshin. Okay, dakshin or dana. According to Vedic custom, on the completion of the ceremony, the yajaman should satisfy the priests and Vaishnavas with gifts and prasadam. It is said without pleasing the Brahmanas, the ceremony has no value. As Sri Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7:14, vidihinam ashrishthanam mantrahinam adakshinam shraddha viraitam yagyam tamasam arichakshate. And that sacrifice performed in defiance of the scriptural injunctions, in which no spiritual food is distributed, no hymns are chanted, and no remunerations are made to the priests, and which is faithless, that sacrifice is of the nature of ignorance. So you also have that, it's dangerous there, it's, oh, we just chant, we don't care for all these things. Then they won't have faith in these things because they don't see them as part of the, you know, religious culture of the devotees. And so then them doing them, oh, we don't need to do or this or that, it's just a show or it's just this and that, then it is just a show. So then, you know, that's if I sometimes say, you know, let's say you're having a big festival, you know, Ratha Yatra or some other, they invite to do yajnas and all that as part of the program. You have yajnas, you have dramas, you're going to have lectures, you're going to have, you know, different things going on. But if it's just seen as it's only that has that meaning and it has nothing else, just like you say, if the lecture is only there to, you know, keep the people entertained, or the kirtan is only to keep people entertained, then you're not understanding what's going on. It's the same with the yajna. It has real meaning and real function like that. And so therefore it's purifying for the people. So you're doing a nitya homa or something that is a general of, you know, devotional and uplifting. Same with dramas. They're not there just to entertain. They have to improve the consciousness. So they have to be something about Krishna. So like that. Chanakya mentions that yajna should be well performed according to one's best ability. Otherwise, it will ruin everyone. Chanakya Niti 8:23. Then, there's no enemy like a yajna sacrifice, which consumes the kingdom when not attended by feeding on a large scale, consumes the priest when the chanting is not done properly, and consumes the yajaman, the responsible person, when gifts are not made. Okay, so he's just saying that there's no enemy like the yajna that hasn't been done properly. So if you haven't distributed prasadam, it destroys the kingdom. If you haven't chanted the mantras properly and all that, then it destroys the priest. And if there's no dakshin given, then it destroys the yajaman. So it gives great benefit, so therefore it has to be dealt with nicely. You know, it's just like a knife. A very sharp knife does very good work. But if you're not careful or don't respect it properly, then you can get cut. So in the same way. So here it's also. So one should say is you can't just say, oh, we chant and it doesn't matter. If it doesn't matter, then don't do these. Don't do them. It should be taken seriously. That's the point. That's why we see one of our six Goswamis and has compiled this book so that we know what's the standard so that we can do it nicely. Right? Okay. So any questions on any of this or? No? Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. We've been talking about these things for a while. Not just officially going through them all like that. Okay, so then we finished the first appendix. Now the second appendix, the common rights, you know, what things are done, you know, that you use basically on all the different, whatever you're doing, if it's anything major, then all these, and even minor ones, you'll do these things, let's say in the morning and stuff, you know, and then during the day, then you'll do the whatever is specific for the particular samskara that you're doing. And then in the morning, then all these things should be done and like that. So we'll see that all today's what? Tuesday, so on Thursday. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada.